Christmas, gifts, Santa. Have you ever wondered what an incredible job Santa would have to do every Christmas? According to the UK news website, The Guardian, so it's a very reputable source of news, this one, well-researched, Think Courier Mail, that's how reputable that it is. There are roughly 510 million kilometres, they surmised, that Santa has to cover to be able to deliver presents to every household. Now, assuming that he has some sort of present-shooting contraption on his sleigh so that he doesn't actually physically have to fit down those chimneys, that gets old after a few hundred years, I think, or that he has to stop at each house, and assuming that he makes full use of the Christmas Eve, right, so about 36 hours, once you take into account the rotation of the globe, he still has to travel at around 10.7 million kilometres an hour. Right? Just a casual 10,000 times the speed of sound. Right? Imagine the sonic boom going around. Santa Claus, magical powers, bending time and space to get around to every household on Christmas Eve. It takes a lot of believing, doesn't it? Around Christmas time for Santa to be real. Now, that stuff is all good fun, especially if you're a kid. To be really honest, I think there's great opportunities in there to be teaching kids at Christmas time with the tradition of gift giving about generosity. So I'm certainly not about to go about bashing Santa Claus this morning, anything but. Especially because Santa was inspired, as we heard Lawrence in the kids talk here, by a real man who knew he was loved by Jesus and actually wanted to display that same love for others. But the problem, I think, though, is that at Christmas time, for a lot of adults, the Christ part of Christmas gets thought of in exactly the same way as the Santa part of Christmas when we get older. Oh, look, I'm guessing if you're over the age of 10, all right, probably over the age of 7, you probably stopped believing in Santa Claus a little while ago. Just the same, maybe, that you're here this morning thinking you've been kind of dragged here, unwillingly, or you're just doing the family Christmas tradition thing, maybe you're thinking that Jesus fits in exactly the same category as Santa and Rudolph and his red nose. And you'll play along with it on Christmas Day, but come Boxing Day, yeah, we're done for the year. In fact, the American Atheist Association had put up a billboard a few years ago in Times Square in New York. That's Santa on his rocket there. They put up this little sign here at Times Square, "Keep the merry, dump the myth." Happy with Mr. Claus, but let's get rid of the mythical Christ guy. Which, again, maybe strikes a chord with some of you this morning. But what I want to do with you in the next few minutes is just to encourage you to rethink with us the basic assumption and at least do some honest reflection on some of the claims that people, Christians, make about Christmas. And so to do that, I'm going to do two things this morning. I'm going to have a look at the case for Claus, all right, and then I'm going to have a look at the case for Christ, rather briefly. First of all, Santa Claus. Everyone wants to believe in Santa Claus. It's such a cool idea, isn't it? Okay. Thank you. That's probably enough heckling from down the back there from my own children. I tell you, this generation, yeah, very, very cynical. So I've done a bit of historical investigation. I've actually read Just Nick, that Lawrence has spruiked before. Great book. And I've done some careful investigation of my own, namely looking up Wikipedia. So, no, I've done a little bit more than that. As you know, Santa Claus goes by the name Saint Nicholas. You can actually build up a little bit of a case for a plausible Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus. So let's start there with a quick dip into history. Just who was Saint Nick? Well, Nicholas, we think his name is Nicholas of Buzi. Buzi is a place. He lived in modern-day Turkey. Back then, the port city of Myra was where he grew up. According to the best evidence that we have, Wikipedia, from 270 to 343 AD, so a long time ago. Legend has it he came from a wealthy family, but he was orphaned young. And young Nicholas went on to become to work in the church and to become a bishop who, incidentally, the robes that they wear, you guessed it, is red. So Nicholas then, excuse me, sorry, my tablet has decided to do something funny. So Nicholas, young Nicholas became the Christian bishop of the city of Myra. And as we heard in this story that that Lawrence took us through, Nicholas has this legend about him that he began gift-giving to his parishioners, to people who came along to his church. It was said that there was a man who had who was elderly and who had three daughters, the Plutus of those story. Back in those days, you don't just kind of get married, right? If you're a woman, you need a dowry to go with it. But he didn't have three dowries for his three daughters to be married off and to have a good future. So he was rather concerned. And along comes Nicholas, and threw in three bags of gold next to his shoes. That's how the sock thing came along as well, next to the fireplace. But Nicholas didn't just stop there. He continued giving secretly, anonymously, for other people in his church. Until one night, one villager kind of sat up all night and caught him in the act. And so the secret of St. Nicholas was out. Gradually, by word of mouth, the legend spread of this man's generosity. And so the image of St. Nicholas of Myra with his white beard and his red bishop's coat, he started turning up in religious paintings and icons. Right around the Western Europe, they kind of canonized him. He became a saint. And he was the patron saint of, amongst other things, giving and providing for kids. His naming day, that's what they did as well. If you have a background in the Orthodox Church or that every day's got to go to saint, kind of. His day is December the 6th. So he missed the mark a little bit. People in Holland, Dutch Christians, celebrated this particular day by giving presents to children. And they called him in Dutch, I think. Matthias will have to correct me later on. Sinterklaas. And that's how Santa Claus most likely came from in English. But same guy. Santa Claus, Saint Nicholas. Now, the funny thing is, not much happened after Nick's death. For the next 14 centuries, we didn't really hear from him very much. But apparently, he kind of came back into the scene and moved from Turkey to the North Pole. And that's where the story gets a little bit murky. It's not until the year 1863 that the American artist Thomas Nast apparently tracked down Santa and painted this portrait of him. And which you can see on the screen, Santa has kind of updated his looks for the times, for the 19th century chic. He's trading his red bishop's robe for a red suit. He's smoking a pipe. He's kind of keeping with the times. And in the US, where everyone's out to make a buck, they put good old Santa to work as well. And his story spread. They wrote poems about him and songs. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. In 1823, Clement Moore wrote a poem called The Night Before Christmas. That's right. But he didn't have... and somehow he found out the names of the eight reindeers that Santa had. But Rudolph wasn't one of them. He only came along in 1949 when the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer made him a household name around the world. And by that time, Coca-Cola Company decided they liked Santa's red suit so much that they signed him up for an ad campaign, and they made him a household name all over the world. Now, that's the case for Claus, shrouded in a bit of mystery and a lot of commercialism in the last couple of hundred years. Someone legendary. I want to ask you this morning, is believing Jesus like that? Is believing Jesus like believing in someone with a kind of a sliver of historical evidence, but wrapped up in so much hype, wrapped up in the murky depths of mythology, that you can't really kind of separate the fact from the fiction? Friends, I want to put it to you this morning, no. I want to just make one very simple point that you can chew on over Christmas lunch. And that is the Christ of Christmas is actually a historical figure. And Christians have always claimed it to be the case. In a way that Santa and Rudolph Well, no one ever really, sorry, if you're a big believer in Santa, no one ever really took Santa and Rudolph seriously as historical figures. The Christ of Christmas is documented and attested like no other ancient figure in all of history. And it matters. Now, you can go on and say, look, this God talk, this Jesus talk, this Christmas talk is a little bit loopy. But I want to put it out there that at the heart of Christmas is actually a set of historical facts. That right back at that time, facts were collated and collected and cross-checked right back to the source in a way that's really different to any fairy tale or legend, which you can see from the words that I read out to you before from Luke's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 1. I'll put it up there again. See how Luke frames what he's about to write. He's about to write something like 60,000 words on Jesus. All right, and these are the words that he starts with. He's a researcher. If you like, if he's around today, he'd be someone who's a bit of an investigative journalist. And this is his claim. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us. He's talking about Jesus and the things that's happened. Just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses. This is courtroom language. And servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also for me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Now, I'm not asking you on the basis of just these words up here for you to believe that it's history. But I just want you to take on board that when it was first written down, at the very least, the guy who wrote this down, the guy who was presenting it, he's presenting it as history. It really happened. He spoke to witnesses. And the very least you can say that is that Luke himself, he was persuaded by what he wrote, by the things that he investigated. He says he carefully investigated everything right from the start. And he's written an orderly account for his friend Theophilus. And we have his words. Notice another thing. In the second part, he dates his historical account. He sets it in a historical context. Here's the next part of Luke's story that I read out before. Notice how it starts. It's not once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away. All right. Some of you may have seen a certain movie recently. All right. No, he doesn't start it that way. This is in the days of Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius, always struggle with that name, was governor of Syria. What do we have there? We have times, right? In the days of Caesar Augustus, we have places. Syria is one of those places. We have emperors, we have governors, real people, real places. This is real history. Now, I'm not going to take the time to trace through the rest of the story and retell the whole Christmas story this morning. I'm sure you heard it many times. But I just want to make this one simple point. There's actually plenty of rock-solid evidence running back in a straight line through history to the person of Jesus. Jesus of Nazareth. Whom, although he wasn't some fancy emperor or governor, although he wasn't a politician, although he wasn't a writer or an artist or a philosopher, he had made such a deep impact in real history as to be totally unmatched by anyone else in history. So I just want to finish by with one more word from another eyewitness, Luke doesn't claim to be an eyewitness himself. He's just collected accounts from eyewitnesses. This guy, his name is Peter, the Apostle Peter, who actually traveled and spent time with Jesus. As a much older man later on, he writes a letter where he says this. You can see it on the screen up there. He says, I'm an old man, not going to be around much longer. All right, but here's something you need to remember, that we apostles, he's talking about himself, Peter, John, the other guys, we didn't make this stuff up. We saw it. We lived it. We touched it. It was real history. Take a look at his words. Right down the bottom there in verse 16. Next slide. No. Okay, I missed it. I'm sorry. I'll just have to... No, it hasn't been updated. I'm sorry. My apologies. It comes from, if you want to look it up this later on this morning, it's from 2 Peter chapter 1 and it's verse 16. Peter says, "We did not follow cleverly invented stories when we told you about the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty." Look, this Christmas, you can believe in Santa Claus if you like, but don't make the mistake of counting Jesus as a myth. No, I'm sorry. It was right there. I just didn't go far enough. Don't make the mistake of thinking Jesus is a fairy tale. And at the very least, if you're a Jesus skeptic, do your Christian friends the courtesy of hearing them out, of thinking it through. Better still, here at our PC, and welcome to all the visitors this morning, and welcome to people who are just dropping in for Christmas Day. It's fantastic to see you. There is actually a number of people here who are trained to take you through a course called Christianity Explained. We'd love to do that with you. That'll get you reading and interacting with the Bible and its claims about Jesus, who he is and what he's done. Or, if you're not at that stage yet, if you just want to do this very easy thing, you can Google The Case for Christ. It's the title of a book by a former investigative journalist. His name is Lee Strobel. His job it was to get to the bottom of things. He's got a really cool story. He started as an atheist. His wife as well, but his wife met some Christians, became a Christian himself, and he thought, "Oh, right, okay, fine, okay, let's get down to the bottom of this," and set out to try and debunk the whole Jesus myth. Instead, he got to the end of his investigations and became a Christian because he found the case for Christ just too compelling. If you Google it, you'll find some good blog posts or YouTube clips you can see to kind of tell you more about the history of Jesus. But if you're not there yet, please just feel free to chat to your friend who brought you to church this morning, or your family. Have a conversation this Christmas lunch about Jesus. I challenge you. Find out more about him. Please, let me finish by saying, have a happy Christmas. But know that even though we think in the world that if you're good, Santa, all right, is going to be very good to you, but the great news that we're telling you this morning, the great news that rings out from the Bible, is that if you're a sinner, if you're someone who's done things, if your track record back through 2019 has been all that great, Jesus, the Son of God, he really did come in real history, in real places, to real people, as a real person. And he came, in his own words, not to seek and save the good people, but to seek and save the lost, to heal the brokenhearted, to set the captives free. Which is why this is the good news of great joy that we celebrate at Christmas time. And that is no myth at all.